Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Materials or items read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Hey there! Welcome to this edition of The Marginalian, formerly known as Brain Pickings, an online digest of interesting and inspiring articles across art, science, philosophy, creativity, children's books, and other strands of our search for truth, beauty, and meaning. All the articles in The Marginalian are written by its founder, Maria Popova, and can be found at themarginalian.org. You can now hear these articles as a part of the series of podcasts from Airs LA, the audio internet reading service of Los Angeles. Today's article is titled Hannah Arendt on Being versus Appearing and our impulse for self-display. Pay no attention to appearing, young André Gide wrote in his Rules of Moral Conduct in 1889. Being alone is important, but even for the most idealistic among us, real life, the act of moving as an embodied being through a world of appearances makes the two increasingly difficult to disentwine. That's what the great German-American political theorist Hannah Arendt, born October 14, 1906, deceased December 4, 1975, one of the clearest and most transcendent thinkers of the 20th century, explores in a section of The Life of the Mind. The immensely mind-stretching book, based on her 1973 Gifford lecture, which rendered her the first woman to speak at the prestigious event. Established in 1888, in an effort to promote and diffuse the study of natural theology in the widest sense of the term, by bringing together influential thinkers across science, philosophy, and spirituality, the series had previously hosted such luminaries as William James, Werner Heisenberg, and Niels Bohr, and later gave us Carl Sagan's Varieties of Scientific Experience. Arendt considers the notion of appearing as central to our experience of being. Nothing could appear. The word appearance would make no sense if recipients of appearances did not exist. Living creatures able to acknowledge, recognize, and react to, in flight or desire, approval or disapproval, blame or praise. What is not merely there, but appears to them and is meant for their perception. In this world which we enter, appearing from a nowhere, and from which we disappear into a nowhere, being and appearing coincide. Nothing and nobody exists in this world whose very being does not presuppose a spectator. In other words, nothing, that is, insofar as it appears, exists in the singular. Everything that is meant to be perceived by somebody. Plurality is the law of the earth. Virginia Woolf called this world of appearances the cotton wool and argued that behind it is hidden the true pattern of being. But for Arendt, the cotton wool and the pattern are inseparable from one another. Such sentient beings, humans and animals, to whom things appear and who, as recipients, guarantee their reality, are themselves also appearances, meant and able both to see and be seen, hear and be heard, touch and be touched. They are never mere subjects and can never be understood as such. They are no less objective than stone and bridge. The worldliness of living things means that there is no subject that is not also an object and appears as such to somebody else who guarantees its objective reality. What we usually call consciousness, the fact that I am aware of myself and therefore in a sense can appear to myself, would never suffice to guarantee reality. Seen from the perspective of the world, every creature born into it arrives well equipped to deal with a world in which being and appearing coincide. They are fit for worldly existence. This interplay of being and appearing, she argues, is what frames our very existence. In a sentiment that calls to mind Alan Lightman on why we yearn for immortality in a universe defined by impermanence, and echoes Virginia Woolf's observation of the elasticity of time, Arendt writes, "To be alive means to live in a world that preceded one's own arrival and will survive one's own departure. On this level of sheer being alive, appearance and disappearance, as they follow upon each other, are the primordial events which as such mark out time, the time span between birth and death. The finite lifespan allotted to each living creature determines not merely its life expectancy, but also its time experience. It provides the secret prototype for all time measurements, no matter how far these then may transcend the allotted lifespan into past and future. Thus, the lived experience of the length of a year changes radically throughout our life. A year that, to a 5-year-old, constitutes a full fifth of his existence must seem much longer than when it will constitute a mere 20th or 30th of his time on earth. We all know how the years revolve quicker and quicker as we grow older, until, with the approach of old age, they slow down again, because we begin to measure them against the psychologically and somatically anticipated date of our departure. She returns to this notion of spectatorship as affirmation of existence, appearing as proof of being. To appear always means to seem to others, and this seeming varies according to the standpoint and the perspective of the spectators. In other words, every appearing thing acquires, by virtue of its appearingness, a kind of disguise that may indeed, but does not have to, hide or disfigure it. Seeming corresponds to the fact that every appearance, its identity notwithstanding, is perceived by a plurality of spectators. The urge towards self-display, to respond by showing to the overwhelming effect of being shown, seems to be common to humans and animals. And just as the actor depends upon stage, fellow actors, and spectators to make his entrance, every living thing depends upon a world that solidly appears as the location for its own appearance, on fellow creatures to play with, and on spectators to acknowledge and recognize its existence. Seen from the viewpoint of the spectators to whom it appears, and from whose view it finally disappears, each individual life, its growth and decline, is a developmental process in which an entity unfolds itself in an upward movement until all its properties are fully exposed. This phase is followed by a period of standstill, its bloom or epiphany, as it were, which in turn is succeeded by the downward movement of disintegration that is terminated by complete disappearance. There are many perspectives in which this process can be seen, examined, and understood, but our criterion for what a living thing essentially is remains the same. In everyday life, as well as in scientific study, it is determined by the relatively short time span of its full appearance, its epiphany. We, too, are appearances by virtue of arriving and departing, of appearing and disappearing. And while we come from a nowhere, we arrive well equipped to deal with whatever appears to us and to take part in the play of the world. The life of the mind, which also gave us Arendt on what free will really means, and the crucial difference between thinking and knowing, is a spectacular read in its entirety. Complement this particular portion with an animated synthesis of Plato's Allegory of the Cave, which remains history's most influential figurative inquiry into the interplay of being and appearing. And Mary Oliver on How to Peek Under the Veil of All Appearances. And that's the end of the article. The soundtrack is Me on the Inside by Ketsa, licensed through ketsa.uk. If you want to learn more about Ayers LA and the types of programs we offer, follow us by clicking on any of the social media links at the top of our web pages. If you like what you see or hear, please click the like button. This podcast is for the sole use of our blind, low vision, and print impaired listeners. Any unauthorized use is prohibited. I'm Emily Mann Sanchez, and I'll be back with another article. Take care, and thanks for listening.